Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Judicial Takings Post-Argument Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On December 2, 2009, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Stop the Beach Renourishment v. Florida Department of Environmental Protection. In this case, the Florida Supreme Court rejected a takings challenge to Florida state legislation directing restoration of storm-eroded beaches along the ocean or lake shores, but specifying that Florida owns a portion of the restored beaches. The Florida court premised its ruling on the proposition that the littoral landowners did not have a pre-existing exclusive property right to contact with the water from their land. The question on certiorari is whether this was a misreading of Florida's property law that constitutes a judicial taking of the littoral owners' property rights in violation of the 5th and 14th Amendments. To discuss the case, we have the Pacific Legal Foundation's Director of Litigation, James S. Burling. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Burling.
This podcast is about the case Stop the Beach Renourishment versus Florida Department of Environmental Protection. And it's all about the right of a state to construct hot dog stands and to sponsor wild bacchanalian spring break parties for drunken college students smack dab in the front of private homes in what would have been considered private beach. More prosaically, the case is about the doctrine of judicial takings and the question whether a court, rather than a state, but a court can take property in violation of the Constitution. This idea has been kicking around for a while, since 1897 in the Chicago-Burlington-Quincy Railroad case, which incidentally was the first case that the court actually applied and incorporated a Bill of Rights against a state under the 14th Amendment. In that case, the court obliquely referred to a state court being involved in the taking of private property when it said, quote, "A judgment of a state court, even if it be authorized by statute, whereby private property is taken for the state or under its direction for public use, without compensation made or secured to the owner, is, under principle and authority, wanting in due process of law required by the 14th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. And the affirmance of such a judgment by the highest court of the state is a denial by that state of the right secured to the owner by the Constitution." But that doctrine really hasn't gone very far until perhaps now. It got a boost 40 years ago, in Hughes versus State of Washington, where Justice Stewart said, quote, "A state cannot be permitted to defeat the constitutional prohibition against taking property without due process of law by the simple device of asserting retroactively that the property it has taken never existed at all." Now, Hughes, in 1967, dealt with questions about how the state of Washington viewed accretions of riparian property and whether accretions belonged to the property owner or not and what was the state of the law when Washington became a state. Justice Stewart was concerned that the state was trying to pull a fast one here, and he said in his concurring opinion, "To the extent that the Supreme Court of Washington on that issue arguably conforms to reasonable expectations, we must, of course, accept it as conclusive. But to the extent that it constitutes a sudden change of state law, unpredictable in terms of the relevant precedents, no such deference would be appropriate." And Stewart continued, "Although the state in this case made no attempt to take the accreted lands by eminent domain, it achieved the same result by effecting a retroactive transformation of private into public property without paying for the privileges of doing so. Because the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment forbids such confiscation by a state, no less through its courts than through its legislature, and no less when a taking is unintended than when it is deliberate, I join in reversing the judgment." Now, this was a concurring opinion and not the law of the land, so this discussion of judicial takings or a taking by a court really was not the sort of case and the sort of issue that courts are very comfortable with. And there are a number of times since then that people took a run at it to no avail. In 1985, there's a Hawaiian water rights case where the Ninth Circuit suggested that a redefinition of a water right by a Hawaiian court might be a judicial taking, but the issue was never ultimately reached in that case called Robinson versus Ariyoshi. The Court of Federal Claims rejected the idea of a judicial taking in a 1991 water rights decision called Fort Mojave Indian Reservation versus the United States. And various litigants have tried to bring the case up in other contexts as well. In a case called Public Access Shoreline Hawaii, where the Hawaiian Supreme Court said that it was not going to pay attention to traditional Western water rights, saying that native rights superseded Western concepts of property law. An attempt was made to get the Supreme Court to look at that as a judicial taking, and it didn't take it up. There is a case out of California where the California Coastal Commission had been challenged, and in a petition for cert, the challenger had argued that what the Supreme Court of California had done was a judicial taking, but again, the court didn't take it up. So in the context of the present case, the Stop the Beach Renourishment versus Florida DEP, pitching the judicial taking idea was seen as a long shot, but perhaps the best shot for the landowners and the doctrine itself for quite some time. So first, a little bit of background about this case and primarily what it's not about. First, and most importantly, and contrary to some of the popular descriptions of the case, this case is not about landowners on a seriously eroding beach in Florida who have received free beach sand from the state and are now complaining about the quid pro quo conditions attached to the receipt of the sand. The beaches of the plaintiffs in this case are not eroding beaches. They are accreting, meaning they are gradually growing in time. And yes, there are temporary retrenchments when hurricanes wipe out the beach, but these beaches always come back. In short, the landowners here did not need and did not want the sand. And there's a backstory here. The local town has long coveted the private beaches and wanted to make them public, but it's not been willing to pay for it. So with a beach renourishment under Florida law, the town had the perfect vehicle. It would dump new sand on the beaches, making them much wider than before, and would declare the new beach a public beach. Traditionally, landowners have owned to the mean high tide line, which is the average high tide line measured over time. If that line moves through erosion or accretion, the boundary line moves as well. A landowner with an eroding beach loses land. A landowner with an accreting beach gains land. But under a 1960s law, the state could change property boundary from the mean high tide line to an artificial line called the erosion control line. It would be permanent and fixed in time and space. The landowner would continue to own everything landward of the new line, but the state could add as much sand and beach seaward as the line as possible, and that would be property of the state. So theoretically, a former beachfront owner could be hundreds of yards from the ocean. The problem is that under the common law of Florida, the owners of littoral beachfront property have always had the right to the accretions of sand and have always had the right to physically touch water with the land. With the new state beach cutting them off from the water, they cried foul, and they argued that the state was depriving them of an essential common law right to have beach front as opposed to beach view property. The case made its way to the Florida Supreme Court, where that court declared the owners never actually had the common law right to beach front property, no right to touch the water. Instead, they said that was only an ancillary right, and the right to access the water was a primary one. And they still had the right to access. They could walk across the public beach and get to the water, just like everybody else. Since the landowners had not lost any right, the ancillary right only was not essential, there was no taking, they didn't lose anything, and they were out of court. Now, there was a very vigorous dissent in the Florida Supreme Court, where one judge claimed that the Florida Supreme Court had abrogated over 100 years of common law and destroyed a well-recognized common law right. In other words, the Florida Supreme Court, according to the dissent, was making things up in order to receive the result. So the landowners went to the Supreme Court arguing there is a judicial taking. That doctrine, however, raises some tricky questions that have made property rights advocates skittish about this for quite some time. First, to what extent should the United States Supreme Court enmesh itself with questions of state property law in order to determine whether there has been a sudden change? After all, property rights are defined by state law, and under principles of federalism, state courts should generally get to decide what state law is. But a countervailing concern also is that the Supreme Court has not been terribly deferential to state courts when other rights are at stake, such as rights of free speech and rights to religion. Moreover, if the state were to have complete immunity from scrutiny, if it abrogates property rights through redefinition, then states would more likely act with impunity in destroying private property rights. Second, there is a question as to how clear Florida state law actually is here in determining that littoral owners have the right to touch the water under the circumstances of an artificial beach renourishment. Since large renourishment programs are relatively new, the common law hasn't had that much time to catch up and to deal with it. So the court here accepted cert. An oral argument was held on December 2nd, 2009, before 8 of the 9 justices. The speculation is that Justice Stevens owns a beachfront condo that has benefited from beach renourishment, and for that reason he opted out in order to avoid the appearance of a conflict. It's been suggested that Justice Stevens not being involved might be a good thing for landowners because he has been the most active judge in promoting a restricted view of property rights. But to overturn the decision of the Florida Supreme Court, 5 justices still must side with the landowners. A 4-4 decision maintains the status quo. So the court began with a series of questions about the common law in Florida, whether avulsion, that is a sudden change from storms or artificial renourishment, was an exception to the general rule. Justice Scalia asked, why isn't this avulsion? Justice Breyer suggested that the right of access was guaranteed. The owners might not have lost anything. Here we have a case that assures that you can go to the water, and there is a new situation arises. You try to apply old precedent, and they reach the result they did. The landowner's attorney, Kent Saffrey, responded that the right to touch the water was different from the right to touch the mean high tide line, emphasizing the distinction between access and view. Justice Roberts came to Saffriot's aid and asked, if someone wanted to put up a hot dog stand on this new land, would you have the right to tell them they can't? And a bit later, to emphasize the difference between the statutory right of access and the common law right of access, Chief Justice Roberts asked, do you have any reason to suppose that a redefinition of property that the legislature isn't free to change tomorrow? Justice Sotomayor returned to the hot dog stand analogy, suggesting under the common law, the hot dog owner could have put up, albeit in water, a hot dog stand for a long time before the state law changed, before the legislation on the seaward side of the land that belonged to the state, even if it was in a foot of water. She then suggested that the landowners failed to challenge the adoption of this new boundary line. The landowner responded in kind and said, yeah, they had responded to that. But Justice Scalia, shortly thereafter, he noted that no matter what happens on the water, such as a hot dog stand sitting in a foot of water, as Sotomayor suggested, he said no matter what happens in water, folks can't come in and lay down beach blankets and occupy that sand right if you have sand in front of your house. And people pay a lot of money for beachfront homes for that right, don't they? And Scalia continued, and that's quite a bit different from having a home behind the beach at Coney Island, isn't it? But Scalia also suggested that homeowners might be getting something in return here. The state gave you some quid pro quo for this, which is to say new sand projected to last at least 6 years has to be replaced regularly because your property is being eroded, which is the reason the state went into this. And what the state has given you in exchange is that if and when there is further erosion, you will continue to own up to whatever the new line is called. The landowner's attorney responded that if they got anything beneficial in return, that could be dealt with in the valuation hearing on the taking claim. When it was the state's turn to argue, Scott Marker emphasized that the addition of sand by artificial means is quite different from the gradual, imperceptible sort of additions from natural accretion. He is asked to draw a line by Chief Justice Roberts. Chief Justice Roberts asks, if the state's project added sand at a foot a year, the landowner would win? McCarr said no. Roberts responded, a foot? Are we dickering over distance? McCarr took an absolute view. Anything added by the state belongs to the state because it is avulsion. But then Justice Alito retorted, you're taking a doctrine that applies to things that occur as a result of nature, and you've applied it to things that are produced by the state. In other words, seeing that this application of the doctrine of avulsion to what's going on here, this artificial addition, might not be appropriate. And on the question of judicial takings, and perhaps said with a nod to Bush versus Gore, Chief Justice Roberts raised the specter of elected judges pandering to majoritarian demands at the expense of property owners. He said, quote, Florida has judicial elections. Say somebody runs for election for the Florida Supreme Court and says, I'm going to change that law. I'm going to say it's not a taking. I think people should be able to walk up right up to the land. And that person is elected and the law has changed. Now, is that a judicial taking? McCarr concluded that that would probably be a judicial taking. Following that little discussion on the viability of the judicial taking theory, at least in that case, that hypothetical case, there was a lot of discussion on the nature of the Florida law and accretion, avulsion, and the like. Whether the court is going to ultimately want to delve into this exploration into Florida state law, it's another question. It's really hard to tell from listening to the argument. But returning to the state's control of the property, Justice Alito asked, suppose that a city wanted to attract more students who are going to the beach in Florida for spring break, and so therefore decided it was going to create a huge beach in front of privately owned homes. Under the decision of the Florida Supreme Court, I don't see anything that would stop the city from doing that. So you could have televised spring break beach parties in front of somebody's house. When Marker said that wasn't what the act was trying to do, Justice Scalia added to the hypothetical, okay, say it's a spring break act of 2010, okay? And after trying to sidestep the question, Marker conceded that under the theory, the state could do that. Justice Breyer then stepped into the defense of the state, arguing that, you know, there were a lot of benefits to the landowners here. He had listed five things. They have access to the water. Two, ingress and egress, if that's different. Three, nobody can do anything to the new beach that injures the upland owner. Four, nobody could build anything that's harmful. And five, you get your beach guaranteed. Roberts kind of responded to that before Marker did. Well, why not take these lists and submit them in the compensation hearing? Now, Justice Kennedy chimed in at this point, and this is important because, as always in these cases, most people speculate that Justice Kennedy will have a deciding vote. And he began a discussion of whether there would be compensation due if there was substantial impairment. So he said, if there's substantial impairment, there could be a taking, he asked. And Roberts, referring to the benefits on Justice Breyer's list, if the legislature next year takes those benefits away, would that be a taking? McCarr began to say, sure, and Kennedy stepped in and said, do you think that either all of the time or some of the time at public beach could be a substantial impairment to upland rights? Marker said, no, 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 the state owns the beach. And Kennedy said, that's exactly my point. You say that the state owns the beach, and I'm asking whether or not a state beach with, what do you call them, porta-johns and hot dog stands and whatnot, isn't a substantial impairment on the upland owner's use. So that's kind of an indication that Kennedy at least understands what's happening here and, you know, how he rules in the decision. We obviously don't know yet, but he gets it at any rate. Now, for the Department of Justice, who was an amicus curiae, Edwin Needler did some argument, and he began by talking about the state's critical sovereign rights and what the legislature had done here, and he was cut off by Chief Justice Roberts, who wasn't buying it. Chief Justice Roberts said, Mr. Needler, that's a clever ploy. We're talking about judicial takings, and you say, don't look at what the court did, look at what the legislature did. And that changes the whole ballgame. And so the focus went back to the judicial takings argument. Justice Breyer began to focus on the redefinition of property rights issue. He hypothesized, what if the state created a power plant easement, but said that was pre-existing? Would there be a remedy under the Constitution for that sort of judicial taking by redefinition? And he seemed to indicate it's an extreme case, and Marker seemed to agree, well, maybe. The court returned then to its focus of accretion versus avulsion in Florida law. Kent Saffriet, on his final rebuttal, focused on the law of avulsion, explaining that it did not help the state because the littoral owner still had the right to remove the avulsive deposits and restore the ability to touch the water. Justice Ginsburg's concluding statement spelled out probably where she stood on the final question from the court. Property owners have, under your theory, much more property than they had before. They have a wider beach that's theirs, and they have gained property. And doesn't that count? And Kent Saffriet for the landowners responded that they haven't gained anything because the state owns the new beach. All in all, the questioning of both sides was hot and heavy in this case, and there's a very active court, and we cannot tell what exactly the court's going to do, of course, but I think they are paying serious attention to this, and for those advocates of property rights, they'll take some consolation in the questions of Roberts, Alito, and to some extent even the questions of Kennedy. And the people who favor the state's ability to maintain a ability to re-nourish the beaches without having that property go to the private landowners and without there being a taking or a judicial taking. Those advocates will take some comfort in the questions of, especially of Ginsburg and Justice Breyer, and to some extent, maybe some of the harder questions of Scalia, of the both sides as well. The question of judicial takings that is now before the court may or may not be decided in this case. It is doubtful that the court will say from the questions that the doctrine has no place at all. What is more of a question of whether the court will say that its place is in this particular case under these facts and circumstances. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.